Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. My circadian rhythms are thrown totally off. Like, not only did we just watch a Toronto Maple Leafs hockey game, Blake, but my kids had the day off today. I had my American portion of the family over yesterday for Thanksgiving. Like, I don't know where I am, what day it is. I don't know what's going on.
I'm all sorts of messed up as well, and I don't have the kids' excuse. I just, it's been a week. It's been a lot. I've had a couple multi-show days. We came in here to watch the World Cup game together. We came in here to watch the Leaf game together. Yesterday, there was obviously bills before work, football game on during the day. It has felt like yesterday felt like a Sunday, weirdly, and today feels like a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, are you a creature of habit?
No, I work in sports.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So for a long part of my career, I haven't been able to be. But then, you know, I started actually working weekdays. You know, I used to work 6 and 7 days a week, and it's hard to have a routine when you're working nights 6 days a week.
Tell you, try living the freelance life for a couple of years where...
No thanks.
Every extra second you work could be a little bit more money or...
But I've come accustomed to a certain way of living, Blake, and now it's just, it's very strange. Although I will... Listen, the more afternoon sports they can throw at us, the better.
I mean, we've got a basketball game that's about to start here that we could just keep an eye on throughout the day.
I love it.
Throughout the show, yeah.
Yeah.
Timberwolves against the Hornets.
They are ours for some reason. No, I thought they were our Thunder.
They're our Magic.
Yeah, right.
They're everything. It's whoever I feel like watching at the time is our.
All right.
No, the Wolves aren't even an hour. They're just more hour
they're
than theirs. The Hornets.
They're their T-Wolves. So, yeah, we got sports happening right now, but let's talk about the sports that just happened. Today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin north of Steeles, is the Toronto Maple Leafs doing it again? Limiting the damage, getting great goaltending, and beating a team that I guess they should have beaten the Wild off to a kind of a mediocre start this season, but Leafs beat the Wild 4-3. And I had this great stat that I was going to throw forward at you that 14 times in 22 games, they've held their opponents to 2 goals or fewer in regulation, but now it's only 13 times because the Wild got a late 6-on-5 goal in that hockey game. But that's the story of this Leaf season, Blake. It's they have no defensemen. They have 50% of the intended goaltenders to start the season, and they just limit opportunities after opportunities.
And the odd time they don't limit opportunities.
Right.
Matt Murray came through with a monster save in the closing seconds today, going east-west to bail them out. That was a game-time goal. It should have been in the back of the net, and that would have been 2 in the last 4 minutes or so with the goalie pulled for Minnesota. They've done a great job limiting opportunities, but you also have a guy like Matt Murray coming through. I know our guy Sam McKee is a big Matt Murray guy, and he's doing victory laps right now. Murray up like well over 920 at this point, I think, and even the third goal, like you could quibble with one of the goals he let in this one. It was like I had it in my notes at one point, like that's kind of the first soft Matt Murray goal, and then he made a bunch of good saves.
Yeah.
And then the third goal that almost, you know, had us looking at overtime or something was not his fault at all.
No, you know what they did get, though? They got better goaltending than the other team.
Yeah.
And I know you can get caught in this, like, there's like a baseball pitcher wins thing where it's like, oh, did you outdo the other guy? But here's the reality.
Yeah, look at the quality of the goals.
Well, here's the reality. In the 6 postseason series that this generation of Toronto Maple Leafs teams have lost in the postseason, they've never gotten the superior goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's just one game, but I'm thinking about that. Matt Murray outplayed Marc-Andre Fleury, who was coming back from injury and looked a little rusty. But yeah, the one goal is the difference in obviously a one goal hockey game. Matt Murray made the saves he had to make, and yeah, did Kaprizov maybe shoot it right into his pad in the final seconds of the game? Whatever. They all count, and he's been great.
Did he knock the net off a couple times with at least a little bit of intent? Who's to say?
Yeah, that is okay. I did want to get to that at some point. So yeah, Matt Murray, it was like 3 times in this hockey game,
yeah.
A couple of times in the last start he made. He's getting into a habit of very opportune moments in which the net comes off its moorings. Now, I didn't get called for a penalty today. And yeah, who's to say how intentional they all are. I would think that at least one of the three that we saw today, if not all three, were beneficial to Matt Murray.
Yeah, I would say there was one that in the moment looked like it was going to be and actually cost them because the play had gone the other way, and that brings the faceoff back your way. I think the most you could the absolute fullest deniability he would have is I slide aggressively across my crease because there's no reason not, like, it's, there's not a bad outcome if you knock the net off unless that puck was going in anyway. So I just don't think there's a real cost until you've gotten a warning. So if he wants to be a little aggressive with it, I guess he feels comfortable with that.
Well, and I would say that if the National Hockey League officials were not on notice to be looking out for that before this game, they certainly are now.
Like, was it the Tim Thomas thing? Was it him who always did it? I remember one of the Bruins series. I can't remember if it was Thomas era or Rask era, but just losing my mind at how often that was happening.
Oh, it's a strategic advantage that has been used throughout the course of hockey history.
And it's evil when Boston does it.
That's
incredibly smart when Matt Murray does it.
Well, and I would say that, yeah, you're right. Keep doing it until you can't do it anymore. It's trending into like the Michael Bunting, Nazem Kadri scenario where you look at the leaders of penalties drawn the previous season. It's hard to do that 2 years in a row because people catch on. Whether you're just a guy that does get fouled a lot, a guy that, you know, deservingly the other guy heads to the penalty box or not, referees don't like to be felt to be made the fool. So I'm thinking this is probably something that's unsustainable for Matt Murray. If in fact it's something nefarious happening, which it may or may not.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt for today. Back to your earlier point though, about, you know, the playoff series goaltending or just the goaltending and this team's defensive capability through a million injuries, being kind of the key story. Like, yeah, the shots were 28-28.
Yeah.
Matt Murray made one more save than Marc-Andre Fleury did. And like, that's an oversimplification, but really that game was close enough in any way you want to chop it up. Like, I got the old fancy stats in front of me. It was pretty close in all aspects. And Matt Murray made one extra save, and that's what the Leafs needed out of him today. Now, granted, they also scored four goals, which has been pretty rare. But that was the difference. And you look ahead to, you know, we talked about it yesterday with Kipper, like what happens if this defensive play that they've had regresses because, well, you're playing Victor Mete and Mac Hollowell 12 and 15 minutes respectively, and you suddenly have, you know, four defensemen playing 20 plus minutes who aren't used to that. One, Justin Hall's played 23 plus minutes and I think like eight games now. If that comes down to earth, you're going to need more and more of that goaltending to come through. So I think they've got to be, I mean, there's no other thing you could feel other than a huge sigh of relief relative to where we came from with the goaltending discussion a month ago, 2 months ago.
100%. No, goaltending feels great. Defensemen, you don't feel great. You feel about the defensive effort you're getting from everybody on the ice defensively, including the defensemen. You know what I was thinking about? So end of this game, and we're having a different conversation if Kaprizov does score that goal to send it to overtime.
Well, we're not even on the air yet in that scenario.
Well, we would have been because the Wild probably would have scored immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah, and the game would have been over. But Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren on the ice in the closing moments of that hockey game trying to protect a one-goal lead, and it's not necessarily a situation you would have drawn up at the beginning of the season. Kind of harkens back though, and I know you're forced into this situation. It's not like Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas have decided, hey, you know what would be great if we get some of the guys, our depth players, our younger players, these reps in really important positions so that later in the season, if they're forced into those situations, they'll have reps under their belt. But remember, like, Greg Popovich used to, like, he would rest his starters and the bench players would end up in these, and it was sometimes it was nationally televised games and he would get his wrist slapped slightly, but sometimes those teams would actually perform above what people expected and those players got reps that they might have not otherwise gotten. And if the situation arised later on in the season, in the postseason, they had those reps. They had done the work.
There's an example closer to home too, and it's what the Raptors have done over the last few years. And it's this question of how do you win while developing, because those things, sometimes it gets you know, chopped into, okay, you're a team that's trying to win a Stanley Cup, or you're a team that's trying to develop for the future. And the teams that are going to sustain success in this league are the teams that can manage both at once. And, you know, with the Raptors, you had obviously the bench mob kind of taking these, okay, they're the 905, then they're the bench unit, then they're moving up. But another part of it was Kawhi Leonard missed 22 games the year that the Raptors won the championship.
Right.
And when Kawhi Leonard was at, Kyle Lowry also missed a big chunk of time that season. When those guys were out, that was the opportunity. It's like, okay, Fred VanVleet's playing a bigger role now. Pascal Siakam's the guy for this game. And they were obviously a much deeper team than this current Raptors that is, you know, we'll get into that later in the show, but probably starting Malachi Flynn again tomorrow. But that's how you do it. And it's not, like you said, it's not the plan. You don't go into this season and you're Dubas and Keefe and you're like, you know how we're going to develop Hollowell and Sandin and Liljegren in tougher minutes? We're going to have all our defensemen get injured. But that's the reality you're in, and you have to take something positive from it. You have to use it as part of what you're building, because you don't have a choice right now. It's either that or lose all these games and blame it on injuries.
Well, and it also doesn't work if you get pounded into sand every time. Yes. Those guys are like, if the Raptors without Kawhi Leonard were like a team that was 20 games under 500, yeah, it's like,
they were
17-5. Yeah. Yeah. If they were 5-17, you get into the postseason and, you know, maybe a Pascal Siakam or Fred VanVleet gets a key moment and they can't perform. It's, yeah, well, they didn't perform during the regular season. So
Leafs have been doing that.
That's what I'm getting at.
8-1-4 now in their last 13.
All these points that they accumulate.
Just the overtime they can't do still.
That's true. But they haven't lost in regulation in like 2 weeks. And they have the fifth highest points percentage in the entire National Hockey League.
They have lost in regulation once in the last month.
Yeah, no, it's like really good and stuff.
Yeah.
They don't look spectacular, and Auston Matthews still only has 3 5-on-5 goals the entire season. And I don't know if you want to have this conversation. It is something that I'm noting to like bring up at some point, that this is, I expect him to break out. I will say that he doesn't look like he's on the verge of some 5-goal performance, but he's Auston Matthews. And like we said, we keep saying, it's like the refrain of the week that once you demonstrate a skill, like you own that skill. And I think Auston Matthews pretty well owns the 5-on-5 scoring skill.
When you are the best even strength goal scorer in the league for 5 years, yes, there is no amount of, like, I'm talking, this slump would need to extend into like deep into next year before I even start worrying that there's a skill erosion here. And it's not just like, obviously there's something up. He hasn't found his spots as well. The puck hasn't found his stick in the right moments. Like those are stretches that athletes go through and players go through. But in terms of like actual concern, no, I would need him to be like a fundamentally different player for a long time.
No, there's no actual concern, but have like great goal scores. No, this is not, I'm not going to say, but there's a concern. I would say that there's an interesting, I mentioned the timing of this potential. Hey, you can go 82 games of being snake bit, right? Mm-hmm. And snake bit for Auston Matthews means that he scores like 35 goals, right? Like even still, he's on pace for about that much, which is like for a guy to have a slump season of 35 goals is outrageous.
Look, just because the numbers are similar, let's use this comparison. Like Auston Matthews scored 60 goals last year, led the league, Leafs record.
I remember it.
Nobody expects Aaron Judge to hit 62 home runs again next year.
Although Morgan Riley said he was going to score 70 this year.
I don't think he's going to accomplish that.
Yeah, I think at this point, it's probably unlikely. Yeah, okay, so let's play out the scenario where he scores 35. Good season. And you look at, like, he finishes the season with, like, a 10% shooting percentage or, like, fewer or less than 10% at the end of the season. You say, man, that was a weird snake bit season, and he still scored 35. And then you go into an offseason, and I mean, so much of what happens in the postseason is going to impact this. You go into an offseason where it's the first opportunity you have to talk extension. You say, are you the 60 goal scorer? Or are you the 35 goal scorer?
Do you think Vlad or Bo are signing any cheaper right now than they were last time? Well, Bo kind of rounded back up, but you think Vlad's? Nah.
I'm just saying that it's a different.
Don't work yourself into a shoot. It's too much.
It's a different conversation than if at July 1st of this past offseason, you had to sit down with Auston Matthews. He's like, yeah, I'll sign an extension for most you can go against the cap. 20%. Give me 20%.
He's still on pace for 78 points. Like he's
really good and stuff.
Yeah, I know you're being a bit of a troll with it, but yeah, I think the absolute only possibility that would give you any sort of pause when you get to that point is like some sort of injury that there's just a lot of uncertainty around. And even then, like if Austin Matthews tells you the first second he's allowed, I'll sign this, you sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's even, that easy.
Probably even if it is like, I want 20% on salary cap. Like, ugh. I mean, it kills you, but yeah, you can't give up on the greatest 5-on-5 goal scorer in the National Hockey League. Again, since he stepped onto the ice. Mitch Marner, shout out to him as well. Extends the point streak to 15 games.
Getting close to the record.
Yeah, seeing eye point shot that deflects off a defenseman's stick. All these points, last point by me on these points that the Maple Leafs have accumulated without any defenseman should count as like more than 2 points. You should get like 2.5 points for any of these victories. That you can bank these things because, like I say, okay, two things can be true. It can be nice to get some of these younger players or inferior defensemen reps in which they wouldn't normally be. You're a much better team when Morgan Rielly is back, when TJ Brody's back. That team is going to be better than this team. So if you can pick up points, if you can pick up victories with Mac Hollowell playing 14 minutes a game, good on you.
That's it. It's like you don't really have a choice but to make the most of this anyway, because no one's going to feel bad for you. Like no one's going to feel bad for anyone else in the NHL, but no one's especially going to feel bad for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So yeah, you have no choice but to weather it. And sure, I think people would be reasonable and have some patience if they come out tomorrow and, you know, maybe it's Chalgren in net, maybe it's Timmins's first game and things just don't click the same way. I think people can understand that. There's going to be at some point, we mentioned yesterday how light the schedule is just in terms of volume of games in December. That's going to be huge when you look at, yeah, Justin Hall hasn't been a 23-minute guy forever, and now he's playing 23-plus every game, and Giordano's playing 23-plus for the first time since he got to Toronto. Like, those things are real, and there will be concern about that. But right now, you're just thrilled that not only you're surviving, you're still getting the points you're every thriving. Time out. It's
you're surviving.
I don't know if thriving. I go as far as thriving.
You're thriving.
I don't think a guy shooting a game tying goal into your goalie, like, just no, that was a good save.
Yeah, but that's the nature little bit of goaltending.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a little bit of a friendliness there.
It's all about positioning, Blake. You know, like, goaltending is about being in the right position, and Matt Murray was at the end of the game. Maple Leafs get 2 points against the Minnesota Wild team, and maybe that builds the equity that you feel better with Eric Chalgren in net, although that hasn't been confirmed because not a true back-to-back tomorrow in Pittsburgh against the Penguins.
I don't get that talking point.
Yeah, well, I only raise it because Sheldon Keefe did.
I know, but like, you're traveling, like, they'll leave there around like 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock and fly. Like, it's not.
Yeah, but it's instead of 24 hours, it's 29 hours.
You get a normal sleep is, I think, the big thing. Like, you'll be there in time to catch your snooze, but no. And it's Detroit tomorrow?
No, in Pittsburgh.
Oh, Pittsburgh. And then Detroit later in the week.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Pittsburgh on Hockey Night in Canada, in Detroit. On Monday against the Red Wings. All right, that was today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. World Cup action today, highly anticipated match between the United States and England, finishes in a scoreless draw. I think that's the fifth of the tournament already this season. Who cares? Like, there is no talking point that, hey, soccer's too boring. You should change the rules in soccer. It's the most popular sport in the world. Like, so if that's your take, it's like, okay. Don't watch soccer. It's fine. The rest of the world will be fun. And that wasn't a lifeless game. There were opportunities. Christian Pulisic hit the crossbar in the first half. In fact, the United States outplayed England for large swaths of this game. I went into this thing, Blake, thinking for sure, despite the fact that half of my family, my wife's half, is American, that I would really be rooting on England and hoping for the United States' demise. But I think... the underdog thing about rooting for the underdog always in sports, it's just too ingrained in me. And I couldn't help it. Like, watching that game, I did want the United States. Like, I didn't want them to get their heads pounded in, which they didn't.
So mine is not as altruistic as yours with the, We want the underdog. Look at these plucky Americans. First of all, they had 0.61 expected goals. Jabroni analytics there. They only beat England by 0.07 expected goals.
Give me a break.
Get on our level.
Yeah.
The biggest reason that I'm okay with the U.S. doing well, and yeah, there's like, ideally, there's a scenario where in the future, Canada and U.S. have a nice soccer rivalry on the men's side as well. And there's, you know, these games feel a lot more important and you're invested in it, like the same way that European powers are hoping other European powers lose, because that changes the way the round of 16 looks and forward. Maybe we'll get there. For right now, I think there's the little bit of the co-underdog thing. But really, for me, this is, I want, especially heading into the next four-year cycle, that confidence level that CONCACAF as a zone competes with these top European powers. So when we see the U.S. with a pair of draws, when we see Mexico with a draw, when we see Canada play the number two ranked team in the world so well, like all of those things, until CONCACAF's getting back into, you know, the round of eight and the round of four with some regularity, it's not going to make a big difference. But for right now, I think it's great that all these teams that Canada had to beat and draw and play competitively with on their way here are also competitive in this event. That's what it is for me, is that there's almost like a, even though you compete against your zone to get there, there's almost like a zone solidarity.
Yeah, I know. It's like an NCAA football thing. It's like a bowl thing. Yeah. Like when you're conference.
What's the RPI? What's Canada's RPI here?
No, it's a great, great point. Although, yeah.
It took me a while to get there, but yeah. I eventually finished the sentence.
No, for sure. Although, I guess it hurts that Wales got blasted by Iran, a very emotional win for Iran, mm-hmm. now, which controls its own destiny. United States, Iran in the final game of that group, and the United States has to win it to advance. England's already through unless they lose by three or more goals to Wales in the final match of that group game. The other game that happened today was Qatar is officially eliminated with their 3-1 loss to Senegal. They scored a goal. So they scored. So they're done. They're like one of the worst performers as a host nation in the history of this tournament, but they scored a goal, Blake, and it's just one match, and Canada, we're super excited about the possibility of, man, not just a result against Croatia on Sunday, but, man, if they expected gold Belgium by two, can't they score multiple and win against Croatia? And then you got Morocco, who played Croatia to a scoreless draw. I mean, the possibility exists of two scoreless draws for Canada and 2 points in the group stage and then headed home, but without a goal. Now, the idea of departing this tournament without scoring a goal for the second time, Canada reaching the World Cup, is unacceptable. Qatar scored.
You want to know my most boneheaded, like, this won't play out, yes. But this is how I would do a take. If you lose to Croatia, so you're officially eliminated heading into that Morocco game, all I'm doing is trying to score. Like, yes, like, yeah. That's it. Let's 100%. Get this goal and go home.
That's a great point.
I don't think they would do
don't
that.
Don't even start Milan Borjan.
No, I think they would want the win. I think that would be more, and they will play their game. You know, everything Canada's shown us so far is that
they
will play their game. But yes, right now, being the only team on the all-time World Cup table with two appearances and zero goals,
yeah,
hurts.
Yeah, it's not really great, as Canada is already the third team to score in each of their first four World Cup matches, joining Bolivia and Greece. So hopefully that does not extend to five.
They got one. Like, yeah. I have the all-time standings in front of me, and they're right now, they're the only team with a two in the appearances column and a zero in the goals for column.
It's not what you want. But they looked really good, and they won. Listen, you don't have the expected goals column.
I certainly don't. And this site, get ready to update this Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because it's coming.
Yeah, we'll see how many people watch that game on Sunday. Almost 4 million people watching the game on Wednesday between Canada and Belgium. All right, before we take the break, we're going to talk to Richard Wilson, who hosts a History of Yugoslav Football podcast, as we try to get a Croatian perspective on things, including this.
Yes, on things, he says.
Here's the thing that I want to get a perspective on. John Herdman, as we now know, said we got to go F Croatia after the loss to Belgium on Wednesday, And in the, did you watch it in the moment and like have to recheck to see if he said F? Because I did. It was like confusing in the moment, but we went back and listened to it.
Well, no, it happened in the office and you said to me, did he just say F Croatia? And I was like, wait a second. Do you mean the letter F or like, are you censoring for me?
No, he said F. Yeah. Who says? Yeah, exactly. Why not go whole hog in that moment? Anyways. And
speaking
then
of whole hog.
he did clarify that he said, we got to go F Croatia. Today, there's a Croatian newspaper that I'm sure you've seen by now had the head of John Herman Herdman, but not the body. It was like, I guess, a cartoon body or someone else's body covered up by a very tiny maple leaf. And the headline says, you have the mouth, but do you have the balls as well? That's a loose translation, but the sentiment of the headline certainly there. So this is something that is making waves, Blake. Canada, first World Cup match in 36 years. And I would say, like, the John Herdman thing is what? One of the top five stories of the World Cup now?
Yeah, I mean, at least here, I don't know what it's like. And this is why we'll talk to our guests in a second here to see. I'm fascinated by so much about this. Like, I gotta know what the decision process was in terms of like picking a body.
Yeah.
Because like, obviously there is a certain part of that body that, the way they've covered it up might be embarrassing to someone, but well, otherwise like the body's fairly in shape. You know, normal nipple placements, stuff like that.
Totally it's hairless though.
It is hairless, but I mean, Herman keeps it well manicured up top. Anyway, it's just a very odd choice to put it on, like, I don't know, like a teenage boy's body, maybe? I'm not sure what's going on.
I don't know. Well, I imagine it's a stock photo, but imagine being the stock photo model who's like, all right, so you're here to take the picture of the, like, emasculated man, right? Like, yes. That's oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah.
There were two casting calls. There were one for you need a tiny little leaf to cover it up in the Photoshop, and then the other one.
Well, hopefully they didn't do those back-to-back, because that would have felt rough for that
also,
guy.
Also, like, just a weird choice. Also, the leaf over his mouth is gigantic. It's as big as his head.
Yeah.
There are just a lot of interesting decisions there. And I know this is a lot of visual stuff on an audio medium, so I apologize for that. But
Everybody's seen it.
It is fascinating.
Yeah, everybody's seen it. If you haven't seen it, go look at it. You have 5 minutes, because when we come back, we're going to talk about it more. With Richard Wilson, host of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. As the Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. And this soccer report is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro. All the way. The countdown continues before Canada, Croatia on Sunday morning. We just took you through John Herdman and the picture that included his head and not his body, covered in a very tiny maple leaf in the Croatian newspaper today. Let's talk to Richard Wilson, host of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Richard, thanks for doing this. So I want to know, what is your sense of how impactful the John Herdman post-match comments in which he said F Croatia after losing to Belgium were?
Ethan, it's great to be on. It's one of those where it's certainly crossed the lines of how people normally discuss games. I mean, even in within Croatia and within the Balkans as well, I think people aren't normally as scatological with how they want to go about discussing it. A lot of the talk around the issue has been the perceived disrespect that Herdman shown to you know a side which ultimately are still the runners up of the last World Cup, and a side certainly who were expecting to win come Sunday.
So it's interesting to hear this contrast, because it feels like a very North American thing, which I know in the football world can be its own criticism, given, you know, the reputation of the U.S. and everything. Here, it was received as pretty funny, like he's trying to fire his team up and show he's confident in them. It's It's a line that we have literally heard basketball executives say to rally up a fan base before. How much of it, like, is there an understanding that this is maybe a difference in sporting culture and not as much of a direct disrespect?
I think, yeah, obviously there is going to be partly culture. I mean, as you say, within US sport, there is that sort of bleeding of extra chauvinism, as it were, which you don't really have so much over in Europe. And even Balkans, which is still has that sort of more masculine culture than most of Europe, it isn't a line you cross too often to make such a direct comment about another team and about what you're going to do. Is, you know, it certainly has come across as very particularly arrogant and particularly disrespectful within the side. And I think it's a big contrast because most of the personalities within that Croatian side are fairly quiet, fairly reserved. You know, you don't see Luka Modric making headlines. You don't see Zlatko Dalic making headlines. You know, most of their personality is very much introverted, and you know, they aren't comments that would be made the other way around. Albeit if Croatia do win, they may be comments to be very tempted to make the other way around after the game.
I'd say. Yeah, I would expect that after the game as well. So the Croatian team and manager haven't responded in kind, but there was that newspaper cover. So is this, you know, the chauvinism kind of came back the other way, which you can say is fair play once John Herdman says that. What did you make of the cover and that as a response? I know it's just one newspaper, but it's kind of been made out to be the response of Croatian football fans.
I mean, certainly for John Herdman's sake, I hope the lower maple leaf on the picture isn't scale. But I think that's more, it's more reflective of tabloid culture in the region. I mean, you know, the sort of tabloid press anywhere in the world don't tend to pull their punches. But I mean, particularly if you spend your time reading the press in Croatia, in Serbia, you know, there is a whole different level to the attitude that's, you know, even sort of beyond National Enquirer level, somewhat in terms of their willingness to go below the belt.
You know, it's the reaction's slightly surprising to me, Richard, because this is a nation making just its second ever appearance in the World Cup and the first in 36 years, still yet to ever score a goal. Like, losing 1-0 to Belgium and outplaying them for 90 minutes was this country's greatest World Cup achievement to date. That this wouldn't be just kind of like laughed off, that somebody would be offended by this, by like an absolute like definition of the word minnow, is a little bit interesting to me. Does it indicate perhaps that there is some concern of how this 90 minutes could turn out on Sunday? How seriously is Croatia taking Canada?
I mean, completely seriously. I mean, particularly after the first game against Morocco, it's changed the dynamic of the group. So I think there was the expectation that Croatia would beat Morocco. But what we saw was an extremely conservative performance where they were just looking really to control the game rather than to win it. And, you know, it was 0-0 because neither side deserved to get anything more than that. Now, once you've seen the performance from Canada against Belgium, I think there's things from that where, from a Croatian perspective, you take quite a lot of heart from, because we saw Canada run out of energy in the last 20, 25 minutes, which is when Croatia tend to come into their own because of the nature of their play. And ultimately, Canada aren't going to create that much again in a game and not score. And that's going to be something that's going to be a bit of a balm to the Croatian backroom. But I mean, this is a coaching staff that will be extremely prepared and know what they're doing for Canada. And I think the other thing to add is that it has now taken on really a must-win directive for Croatia. You know, this isn't a game they can just control and ride out 0-0 or 1-1. This is a game now they have to win and, you know, and do the job well.
So here in Canada, if we're rooting for Canada on Sunday, what can we expect to look different from Croatia than Belgium? I know, you know, how they play through the midfield is a little faster. It's a little different. What do you think Croatia will do differently than Belgium in terms of trying to slow that Canadian press and counterattack?
I mean, I think the real focus from what we've heard from Dalic post-match is on the fullback regions. The flanks didn't really work very well against Morocco. Borna Sosa and Ivan Perisic just sort of got in each other's way. Obviously, on the right, Nikola Vlasic came off at halftime, and it left that side of the pitch completely left to its own. I think probably we'll see a bit of a reversal of that, with a lot of focus on the right side to try and combat Davis, but then looking to really stretch the play. You know, what we saw against Belgium was that if you're looking to get at the back line of Canada, it is stretching that play, getting into the spaces in behind. That isn't necessarily something Croatia are naturally built towards doing, but I mean, when you have a midfield with Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric in, you can pretty much put them to any task you want, and you know they'll be able to execute it. So I think that will be the focus on something will be just stretching that back line, opening up the space between defence and midfield, and opening up space in the channels for Perisic and probably Maia on the right wing to be able to come inside and expose the central defence to dribbling.
You touch on this a little bit about how Croatia needs to accumulate the full 3 points on Sunday against Canada. That will be the intention, and anything less than that will be viewed as a disappointment. How much pressure is on this program after ending up in a final against France in 2018? Luka Modric is 37, and we talk about this golden generation of Belgian players like nearing its best before date. I mean, how is this generation of Croatian football viewed?
I mean, for this particular tournament, there is an expectation this side gets through the groups. When you you know, talk about sort of the expectations of the pundits and whatnot within the country, the expectation is quarterfinals or later with this particular group. You know, this squad is perceived as a stronger overall squad than 2018 because, I mean, as I say, Luka Modric may be 4 years older, but he doesn't look it when he plays. For the likes of Brozovic has come further into his prime. The players that you're sort of missing from the 2018 squad, Mandzukic and Fisalko, but both of those have been replaced by what's come through in the interim. And certainly the depth options that are available to Croatia now are far stronger than they were in 2018. So it is quite an interesting group, in so much as, you know, I don't think anyone really expects them to get to the final because there were unique factors about how 2018 panned out relating to the draw and other sides. But there are still great expectations on this side to play in a way that exceeds 2018.
Well, can't wait to see Sunday's match. And yeah, people in this country now have different expectations after that 90-minute performance against the second-ranked FIFA nation, but Croatia not far behind it at 12th overall. Richard, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
No, thank you.
There's Richard Wilson, host of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Yeah, setting the record straight on the feelings of Croatia towards Canada.
So here's one thing we didn't get into with Richard, and it's a possible take on how this has all played out. And maybe it's, a more North American way of thinking or non-football way of thinking. All of the talk over the last couple of days now has been about John Herdman and not about this Canadian national team. The Alphonso Davies penalty kick conversation sounds behind us. Like, I know we could go into the Atiba Hutchinson explanation, but there is possibly an element of, well, John Herdman is taking all the heat on his shoulders. Dude. Well, not that there's a lot of heat on Canada because everyone was so impressed with that, but yeah, if there were any element of pressure, do you put any stock into that?
Oh, man, I love it how we're going to talk about Gretzky in a secondary term when it comes to that game on Wednesday, because we talked about Gretzky not being part of the shootout in Nagano. We could also talk about Gretzky as the GM of the Canadian team in Salt Lake City, talking about how it's a crock of crap, right? And putting it all on himself and relieving the pressure from that Canadian team. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I think you answered your own question. You said there's really, I mean, we can talk about the Davies thing, and I do think it's a big deal, and I think it's a real, real interesting subplot headed into Sunday who might take this thing. But it's not, is anybody, if Canada, you know, loses to Croatia and bows out in the group stage, going to say, well, John Herdman really screwed up because he allowed Alphonso Davies to take that PK on Wednesday? I just... My level of expectation is growing, as is everybody who's watched this program all the way through qualifying into that first match on Wednesday. And as much as I want to come in here and say that it's unacceptable if Canada doesn't score a goal or win a match in this group stage, considering how well they played, I know that's not entirely genuine. Like, the expectation, this is still such a surprise that they're even here. And that they played 90 minutes against the second-ranked FIFA nation.
So this is why, I mean, I set you up for that question because I've seen people talking about that. I don't put a lot of stock in the, you know, Herdman taking the heat off of his guys thing, because I think, one, Herdman's message the whole time has been, we belong. And part of that message would be, well, yeah, this is what comes with it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you want the smoke,
pressure,
you get
is
the
a
smoke.
Privilege.
Yes. Makes diamonds, etc. And I think that, you know, you don't, we were talking about this before we came on air, you don't bring Chris Hadfield down to the World Cup if you, and be like, hey, he was the first Canadian to do this thing. You guys are about to be the first Canadians to do another. If you're not happy to have a little bit of pressure on your guys and let them know the weight of the moment. So, I mean, I wanted to ask your take on it, but no, I think it's good if they're feeling pressure heading into this game, not pressure in a sense of like getting too tight, but like, know the moment, know the size of it, and know that that last game showed that you belonged even with that pressure on. So I think it can be a good thing heading into this one. The Herdman thing is, for me, just a side story, and also like a little bit of a get to know the sports culture of that region, because the way Richard laid it out for us is much different than ours.
I guess. I suppose. Yeah, maybe by the players, not necessarily by the fans. But I would say that, okay, maybe there was a little bit of, well, I know explicitly that John Herdman was speaking to the players because that's literally what he told his players. But then relaying that message to the fans, that's like, it is, again, it's a Masai Ujiri priming the fans thing, that the fans should have this expectation, right? Like, Masai Ujiri's F Brooklyn thing was, hey, Brooklyn, like, really tank down the stretch to put itself in position to play you in that first round series because they didn't believe in you. Believe in yourself, okay? Yes. You can win a championship.
The believe in yourself, believe in your city one was a couple years later.
Okay, but it was headed towards that.
Yes.
That's where the seeds were planted to the believe in yourself thing.
Yes. And you know, if we were going to, like, I think Masai's F Brooklyn was more of a, like, forget about them. Let's focus on us. Like, we're here. We're the story, not them. Whereas Herdman's was more of was more in the verb sense of like, this is what we're gonna do to them. We're gonna mess them up. Like, we're gonna go. And I think that, you know, obviously that word has different meanings and different interpretations. Obviously, with the way Croatia took that one. But no, I think it's again, it's just, we've talked to a couple people who've been a part of that program over the years this week, and they all said the same kind of thing, is that one of John Herdman's biggest skills is providing that group with the confidence to be themselves and play the way that they want to play and block out that other stuff. And I think, you know, him rallying them up with something like that, he knows.
Yeah.
He like, have we ever heard anything about John Herdman walking something back, or like
he didn't even really walk this one back. He's
knows,
like, I don't hate people from Croatia.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he said. He wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yes, he knows what he's doing all the time. Like, it's, I don't want to make it seem like he's some galaxy brain, like pulling the strings, like I'm going to say this and Croatia's going to react that way and that's going to help us on the pitch this way.
I'm going to be on a newspaper.
Yeah, I just think he knew that saying that would get a reaction and he was okay with accepting that reaction.
I do wonder, and I can only infer, what facing a team that needs to score will look like against this team that is capable of scoring, because Belgium didn't do that. Like, Belgium scored and they looked good at times.
And it would have been interesting to see how that game played out if Belgium didn't score right before the half, or if Canada had scored on that PK.
Because they would have felt the same thing in the second half, that they needed to score. They would have been not pleased with a scoreless draw.
Right. And their strategy was, and part of this is personnel based, and you know, the comfort level we've heard about Belgium kind of and the style they play, but they were comfortable to sit back a little bit to eat up some of that Canadian pressure, and like we've talked about a bunch, 8 block shots, and then send that deep long pass over the top and hope that Canadians' backline makes a mistake. We'll see. Croatia is different. I watched that game. They look faster than Belgium, that's for sure.
This team was in a final 4 years ago, and we just heard a guest say that they're better this time around.
Yes. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it would have been interesting to see if Belgium had that foot on the gas to them. If this one is 0-0 into the second half and we get to see that from Croatia, I think it'll tell us a lot about Canada and their ability to withstand that and counter against a team that is also pressuring to try to score. It could get pretty fascinating that way. The other way it could get really fascinating is if Canada's up like 4-0 right away, and then
that'd be really
we see what their prevent defense looks like.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Lastly, before we go, you alluded to this thing, this Atiba Hutchison quote, revealing the strategy behind PKs and the planning that goes into it, or lack thereof, because he said it explicitly. Coach John Herdman has left it to the players in that position in regards to who's going to take the kick. And he talked about the decision-making on Wednesday that, hey, it wasn't even much of a discussion. Alphonso Davies just had the ball and was like, you good to go? He's like, yep. And then he took the kick. I mean, after sitting at the spot for like a minute and 20 seconds and yada, 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 we know what the result was. I get it. I understand the thought process behind that, is that all the best laid plans, right? And in the moment, maybe the players themselves can best evaluate who's performing best in the moment. But I would say that's a tough thing to put on a player who's in the middle of calm. And I know there's also like, I'm speaking out of school here in regards to that being part of soccer culture as well, that this is like, it's not an unheard of thing that we're talking about here. But if it were me, I would be cold and calculated. And listen, I'm talking to Mr. Numbers here. I can't imagine you're going to disagree with me here that I would go into it with a more concrete plan than, hey, who feels like taking the biggest kick in the history of Canada soccer?
I said yesterday, and we actually almost disagreed on this in a backwards way of what you might expect, where I was fine with Davies and I was fine with you preferring David. I just need that. It needs to be one plan or the other.
Yeah, I know.
That's what gets me. In this case, I mean, I think that that's an empowering thing you can do. And again, Herdman knows this group really well. We've heard that from a bunch of different guests, that he knows, you know, when it's carrot, when it's stick with different guys to motivate them properly and have them at their best. So maybe he knows that based on that group, based on those personalities, that's the way to do it. Maybe he knew what the outcome would be, that Alphonso Davies is going to want that. So I can empower the players.
Yeah, can also wash your hands of any responsibility.
And that is the one drawback to it, I think, is you can wash your hands of responsibility, but it does leave room, and I'm not saying Canada's feeling this because everyone has stayed on message, and I would bet that locker room would tell you they're okay with Davies taking that shot and taking it again. There's like a tiny, tiny little bit of, at least if there was disagreement within the players, you can point at the coach, right? And be like, well, that's what he decided.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if Alphonso Davies on Sunday goes, give me the ball, and Jonathan David is like, I kind of want to take this one. You missed the one the other day. If John Herdman's making that call, then at least they don't have to decide on it. But I don't know how, like, again, I haven't played soccer at any kind of high level. I don't know what that looks like.
And
I
people know that. But we can, and we can leave that defender. Caveat.
They would never let me near the ball. My whole thing was
Jimmy Brennan.
Yeah, get the ball out of our end, and then when we have possession of it, we don't want to notice you.
Yeah.
That's what I was, so.
I don't know. I view this also through a non-sporting lens that, like, the superior, the manager, even if you know, sometimes your manager will come to you and be like, hey, what's your decision? And then I'll be the one messaging that decision so that it's not you doing that decision, depending on your role. Anyways. I think this
lost me a little bit on that one.
To me, it's an abdication of responsibility, honestly.
Okay.
It is. Sure. It's not something that you can haphazardly say, hey, guys, I don't know, somebody take the kick. We'll talk about it afterwards. Anyways, this soccer report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. When we come back, we got a Scotty Barnes update for you. And maybe a little bit of baseball talk next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.